Wake up, America. It's Morning Air with John Morales.
Si, senor.
Sarah Tafoya.
That's my mom.
And Glenn Leverins.
This is Morning Air.
On Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
It's the happy baby noises. Never a problem. Never a problem. Always happy to have plenty of those, courtesy of those wonderful Tafoya kids. It's Morning Air. Thanks for joining us, Glenn and Sarah. In for John today. Coming up, we'll learn about being a good teammate. We'll talk more than just football. Probably a little bit of that, though, with Dave Durand, our success and leadership coach. That's on the way before this hour is through. But as we contemplate the visitation a little bit, talking about holy friendships today. Sarah, as a newly pregnant mom to be there, were you able to or thought about, wow, I could really use someone to talk to about this and maybe someone to kind of cling to for support through all of this?
Oh, yeah, no, you need to have support. It's so good to have someone to kind of talk through all the crazy things that are happening with your body, you know, whether that's, you know, just maybe it's not someone who's pregnant at the same time with you, but like someone who's obviously, there's many different women who've been through it, including your own mother, siblings, cousins. Sometimes you find new friends. There's a community out there somewhere that it's just great to just have someone to kind of chit-chat with. And eventually, you know, you do make a good connection with someone, whether it's right off the bat. Maybe it isn't. Maybe it's maybe you're going to the library for story time or something and you start striking up a conversation there. Even when your kids are in school, you get friendships all along the way. And it's really important because, man, just that those mischievous laughs at the beginning of today's show, every time I hear that, I think, man, what kind of trouble is that kid getting into? And I'm glad I'm at work. I don't have to clean that mess up. But it's really important because, man, it can be a struggle to be a parent. So it's always good, man, you got to have someone there that you can walk through everything with. Especially, I'm thinking about Mary. I mean, that had to be, you know, she's kind of thrust into this. She wasn't prepared. So I'm sure that was very helpful to go see Elizabeth.
Oh, and we think of Mary getting the most amazing news anyone has ever heard. And then, you know, when one might be thinking about oneself a lot in the midst of all that. No, what does she do? She goes. She goes and travels to help out someone else who also is pregnant. Goes to do and serve others. Talk about a great outward view. We're going to talk about the visitation and more today. Father Marcel Tyone joins us from Narragansett, Rhode Island. Father Tyone, always great to have you along, and great to talk about the visitation today.
I love the visitation. One of my favorite feasts and celebrations in the liturgy today, and it's wonderful. It kind of falls this year right as we begin ordinary time and ending the month of Mary. But I love the visitation for so many reasons, and some of you kind of touched on that here at the top of the hour. But imagine Mary becomes with child, holding the Christ, our Savior, and then she sets out right away. It's interesting. You'd think she would sort of want to almost rest, but instead she goes out, and of course the charity certainly towards Elizabeth, who would have been much older than Mary, who's also with child, and maybe going to assist her, to encourage her, but again, as you all shared, but sharing what you're going through with someone who's going through it is always a special gift and a grace and a strength, and that's what we find here in the visitation. So we find four people present, right? So there's John the Baptist, Jesus, Mary, and Elizabeth, four distinct persons together, and the second person of the Trinity inside Mary, and I find it's a beautiful image of her going out, going to Ayn Karim, going to visit Elizabeth, and we're told that they were together for weeks, praying, helping each other, and certainly getting to know each other as with child. And again, it would have been obviously a first and only for both of them. So we know that it would have been an extraordinary journey, but to be able to share that and to kind of maybe reflect, what is God doing here? What is the Lord doing through both of us? And they both really had extraordinary things happen to them and great signs given to them. And it can only be something that almost really take to meditation and imaginative prayer, I think, in a positive way, is something we can easily do around the visitation.
Oh, and Father, I just, again, think of how Mary was able to think outside herself. That really strikes me with the story. And then, of course, you know, the baby's sort of, you know, communicating a little bit, or, you know, John recognizing, wait a minute, this is something amazing here, leaping in the womb. And so you've got, like you say, four people involved in that interaction right there. But what can that teach us, Mary and Elizabeth, about having the importance of having those holy friendships?
Well, I think it's an important thing in life, right? The Lord has, God has created us to be in communion with God and others. So that's why we long for heaven. And heaven is total communion with others, where there's no loneliness, no isolation. And certainly in the ways of friendships, we might have what we call holy friendships or blessed friendships, or Christ is part of every relationship we have with anyone, even those that do not know him, if we know Christ. However, I do think there's an exalted, a higher state when two people acknowledge Christ as Lord and they share friendship with each other and help each other, encourage each other to discern God's will, but also to stay strong in it and to be able to do what God wants. And that's what we find here, sort of a model of a holy friendship. And I think, you know, that's something for all of us to meditate on today. Celebrating the Feast of the Visitation, we think, oh, this is great, this is miraculous, this happened way back there. God loves me, I've got my life today. But I think the visitation has a great relevance. Again, I think it wasn't just a, I love the word visitation, right? It's a visitation. Christ is present when they come together. Again, you mentioned there John the Baptist acknowledging the Christ, even from the womb, already being drawn to the divine presence, the divinity of Jesus being certainly amazingly present, really present in that time together. But for us, I think we need to have an acknowledgement of that and a readiness to understand, and to maybe a desire in prayer to bless our relationships and our quote-unquote visitations. You know, if we have to go to school during the day or meet other people, are we doing that in the spirit of visitation or just sort of happenstance, the people we meet during a day? But sort of, I think all of our interactions during a day hopefully will take on, if you will, the spirituality, the model of the visitation of Blessed Virgin Mary. We might not be able to, we're not as full of grace as Mary, but we can certainly try to imitate that and be open to that. I think, again, the gospel tells us that she went out in haste. Like, she definitely had a clear purpose in her mind, her heart, and her soul to go out to see Elizabeth. We're told she went out in haste to kind of this deep interior impulse to go to Elizabeth. And she certainly would have received a lot of graces herself from not being alone and sharing that. But at the other point of it, too, I think Mary also received, right? She received the grace of company, companionship, and a sister's experience during that pregnancy. But also she would have, I think, trusted God's plan more, knowing that they were both sharing. She would have received the grace of the encouragement. Maybe that's what it is here, right? So the visitation reveals to us encouragement from God, but also encouragement from others who know and love the true God, so that we're not alone in life, especially in times of challenge. I mean, again, being with child is an extraordinary experience. There are anxieties around it, and people think, and you know, what's going on here? What is this all about? And I think those kind of thoughts need to be shared with others that love God. And so that's what we're doing. And I think, especially, again, women with child, but any human person, God's asked all of us to do certain things in life. And some things we kind of don't understand sometimes. Why, you know, why is this happening? Why is this unfolding in my life? Maybe I've got a long-term care for someone. Maybe going through grief. Maybe struggles inside family relationships or at work or at school. Maybe troubles with neighbors, or maybe feeling a kind of a disconnectedness from other people. And if we're kind of experiencing something, I think kind of being with the right people that love the Lord, that are experiencing the same things, or at least people that can encourage us to do the will of God, this is sort of a fingerprint of what the visitation can give us today. So Mary's always our model, our mother, but today she's very much modeling for us, I think, charity, support, openness to receiving and giving encouragement, which I think is an important thing, genuine encouragement to following the will of God at all times and all circumstances. So that's something all of us need to do as part of daily life. We sort of don't have an option in a positive way. We all have to get through our days and do whatever God puts in front of us each day. And sometimes we say, oh, God will never give us anything too much that we can't handle. He won't give us the grace to sustain us, and that is true. And in the visitation, Mary gave grace, received grace, even the unborn child Jesus, again, kind of John the Baptist acknowledging him from the womb, where we know the intensity of the presence of Jesus just changed everything. And even here, so early on in his existence, again, God bless the pro-lifers, but today we all of us who are, please God, we think of this unborn child having a magnificent universal effect on this other pregnant mother and his cousin, and all the things. God would ask a lot of John the Baptist, we know. He would ask a lot of Elizabeth and Zechariah. He would ask a lot of Joseph and Mary, but not without giving them the grace that they need. So maybe this visitation, maybe in our own lives today, I just challenge all of you listening today, you know, what is it in your life? Where does Jesus want this visitation feast to help you, to encourage you, to strengthen, also to call you to go in haste? Maybe just physically travel somewhere. We can go in prayer. We can go in haste in prayer to commend people to Jesus, to bring people to him, to be at Mass, to do spiritual communions. All these things we can do, like maybe we can go out in haste to others, physically or spiritually. And maybe that's how we celebrate this feast today. We do that today, maybe contacting someone who's a bit lonely, someone who's maybe been off the grid a little bit or not feeling well. And that's a way to leave the Eucharist and leave the altar and go out and do what Mary did and try to do that ourselves today.
Father Marcel Tayoda is with us talking about the visitation today. If you have questions about holy friendship, maybe one that's really made a difference in your life, you'd like to share that. Our number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Father, are we finding almost a drought in terms of serious friendships and a serious drought in this, in that we have access to communicate with people like crazy left and right? Friends and acquaintances and perfect strangers, you know, we can electronically talk to them all day long, but serious friendships like a Mary and Elizabeth, is that something we need to work harder to cultivate or look for those who really are longing for that and see if we can help?
Yeah, sure. No, I think it's a really important thing, right? We're all called to share the gift of friendship in life, and that means different things to different people. You know, I would point out, I think it's obvious, but it's good to hear it again, that however many quote-unquote friends someone might have on Facebook, those are not friends. That's not friendship in the true sense of the definition. Just seeing pictures of someone else's life is not a spiritual friendship. That's, you know, it might call us to prayer for people suffering or not, maybe, you know, keeping sort of a, finding out the history and pictures of someone else's thing or a little message here or there, but that's not a friendship. A friendship is a real sharing from the heart of the life's journey. You know, again, I would call it spiritual friendship, where two people acknowledge Christ as God, two people have a prayer life, and the height of spiritual friendship would be really helping someone else in a very overt way to keep up their relationship with Jesus, their prayer life, and what God's asked them to do. So those are friends, and I think friendships, they take time, right? Sort of time tests friendships, and you know, I certainly am so blessed in my life, rich with spiritual friendships, a priest and lay people. But I think it's something we all need to sort of be aware of and to ask for, because it's an important part of life. And today, again, you bring up a good point. I think you know, through COVID, it was difficult to see anyone. Even family relationships were physically separate. It was very, very grueling for many people. Who maybe didn't have friendships even before the pandemic came, but now we need to all kind of be back out in a sense as best we can, but trying to be with people physically present. I think, texting someone in a nursing home versus writing them a letter on a piece of paper with a stamp versus, you know, video timing them versus actually being in the room with them, holding them, feeding them lunch, listening to their problems, seeing what they do all day. We think of the different heights of intimacy there, the levels of intimacy. Mary went in haste, and you know, I believe with all my heart that if they had iPhones in the first century, Mary still would have gone physically to pray with and be present to Elizabeth, because the presence, the physical presence and the sharing is really kind of what builds a holy friendship, a spiritual friendship, or a really even classic friendships. So I think today, you know, maybe the other way to celebrate this feast day is to recall the people in our lives that have had good relationships with us, those that have walked with us maybe through challenging times and difficult times that most people have very often. And so, you know, what maybe those people God has placed in your life and that he's placed you in someone else's life. And sometimes I always find, you know, the other thing that I find very encouraging is that suffering unleashes love. And when we're at the cross, when people are going through things, those are often the, if you will, the seeds of a friendship. You think of many people, when someone, they lose someone, I've had people lose children or parents, and the people reaching out to them and the support they receive actually ends up blossoming friendships in life in the most unsuspecting ways. Remember that crazy story, the plane went down up in Northern Europe somewhere, and all these people were taken into people's homes they didn't know. And to this day, there's many, many friendships from that great tragedy. I think a movie was even made about it. But we think of that's God using, taking advantage of a terrible situation where he accompanies us. And those roots, those seeds of friendship that happen, some are chosen by God for us. We choose to work on friendships with people, and today might be a day to do that, right? So sort of the visitation might be, the mission of working on relationships, on true, deep friendships. And we have those hopefully in families. People have them with people, have lifelong friends, and others. Sometimes you meet new people in retirement, in a new school, people transitioning to college and new jobs this time of year, people leaving middle schools and high schools, and that's a real big transition. One of the biggest things, the challenges, is not having those same relationships we kind of grow to rely on. All of a sudden, we're in a different environment. People that have to, military personnel, have to change location, and sometimes be some jobs that require people away from their spouses, away from their children, to serve or for a bigger picture, and it can be very, very difficult and also a little dangerous. Like, who are we going to spend time with and kind of root ourselves? And that's why, you know, again, I think when people travel, when people are separated from home, from their normal basic relationships, but again, to try to find those places where you can go to Mass, even daily Mass, get the rosary, get the relevant radio app, kind of keep the prayer life up and that intimacy with Jesus, with which there's no other. So the closest person we should have our relationship with is God himself, and he wants to reveal himself, pour himself out to us. And then in those moments after prayer, we kind of can maybe have sanctified relationships. You know, not every person in our life is going to be a spiritual friendship, and it shouldn't be like that. But our spiritual friendships, and certainly our primary relationship with God, gives us the fuel, the grace, again, to go out to Elizabeth, to go out to do God's will, but to be supportive of others that God is calling to do things, and that sometimes can be a heavy lift, can be things that require self-sacrificing love, especially if someone's fatigued or a little bit discouraged or been through a lot. The Lord's going to give us the grace we need to do that by providing us with relationships that not only sustain us, but give us life and give us rest. You know, I think the book of Sirach has one of my favorite books in the scriptures. It says, the one that finds a friend, like finds a treasure. In other words, that kind of maybe like picturing an image of, I picture Mary and Elizabeth together and sharing and praying, but almost like finding shade from the sun on a hot day. The grace to be at peace in the shade of God's love and sharing prayer and sharing their experiences, encouraging one another. And that's something we're all called to do. So the visitation and friendship spirituality is something we're supposed to live every day. But the visitation is an opportunity for us, I think, to sit back, take a look at the beginning of Christ's life in the womb, and what his mother did, I think, is a great example for us and encouragement. But it might even be a challenge if we don't think about these things maybe as we ought in a kind of a collected way.
Well, you mentioned military families and the moving around. We've got some very good friends that have lived all around the world due to the military, and I broadcast from Minnesota, and they would give us grief about Minnesota folks. You've still got your friends from kindergarten, which is true, and also the phrase Minnesota nice means, oh, Minnesotan, you ask for, they'll give you directions to anywhere at all except to their own house, right? Like they don't have room for more. But just thinking about maybe we ought to allow room for new people to come into our lives as friends over the course of a lifetime. They say it's harder to make friends the older that you get, but I think if we get in different situations, that allows for different opportunities. But any thoughts on, Father, just us being open to what maybe God has for us in the person of someone who we could be a friend to?
No, for sure. And I think I've seen the opposite. I've seen many, many seniors when they move to, you know, again, I think most daily masses across the country have sort of an underground community of people praying together, even they don't have to know everything about each other, but praying together develops that kind of basic spiritual friendship. But I've seen marvelous things. So sometimes someone loses a spouse and become a widow or widower, and then kind of really have kind of a period of great grief. But then all of a sudden, like over time, we'll go out. And I've even seen people go to assisted living and even a nursing home and come alive, like have a whole new lease on life because the socialization that's present. And they oftentimes, if they sit at a certain table with someone for lunch, and they'll try to pair people, of course, with similar personalities and interests. But I have seen people have a whole new life developing friendships in the kind of the later years of life. And so these transitions that sometimes people dread, oh my gosh, you know, assisted living, nursing home, you know, you just find that, I find that there's an extraordinary grace in it, and people are, not only do they get better care and they're safer, but oftentimes their hearts, especially there's prayer involved in these kind of places, but I've seen miracle resurrections of spirit in many, many older people who end up like almost reluctantly going to a place and then have a whole blooming of communion and friendships that do develop. So I think there's no part of our lives where the Lord cannot do something for us. And sometimes we sharing someone else, sometimes people go to assisted living, or even while they're going to surgery in the hospital, they might encourage a CNA, get to know their story, kind of minister to them. And that's sort of a visitation. Sometimes people in the hospital bed can, if you will, do a visitation for a nurse who's tired, or a doctor, the housekeeper. And so these kind of miracles happen every day. And those are mini visitations. So I think we need to be open to that kind of experience and never close the door to friendships that might be rooted in God, that God would want for a minute and sometimes for a lifetime and sometimes just at the right time, so that we can share like Mary and Elizabeth did in their new circumstances.
Oh, absolutely, Father. Great point, too. I saw that in my parents' life when they moved into assisted living and suddenly too busy. My mom too busy with the people wanted a fourth to play cards. She was missing some of her programs, you know, and my dad, even in retirement before assisted living, getting to be kind of a fix-it guy along with another old guy that had some skills at church and worked on things he never had before that and built those friendships. So we're called to always be open to that in the spirit of the visitation. Thanks so much for your thoughts on the visitation and more, as always, Father Marcel Tyone, pastor at St. Thomas More Catholic Parish in Narragansett, Rhode Island, joining us this morning. Morning Air continues. We'll have a story corner for you before the hour is through. Right around the corner, we'll talk about being a good teammate, you know, and even the case of some, you know, former Packers and Vikings now becoming teammates. Are you a good teammate at work and elsewhere? Dave Durand is next as we continue with Morning Air on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app.
Looking at life from a Catholic worldview, this is Morning Air.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us for Morning Air here on Relevant Radio. It's Glenn and Sarah in for John today. Story Corner coming up before we're through. And we've got, you know, the important parts of the sports season, the winter sports season still going here. We'll wrap it up sometime in June. And we're talking about being good teammates today. On the field, in the boardroom, in the classroom, around the house, and are you a good teammate? We'll talk about that with Dave Durand, who's been a good teammate of Morning Air for some 20 years. Dave, good morning. Always great to have you along.
Hey, Glenn. Great to be with you.
All right. Hey, we're talking, we often banter a little bit about Vikings and Packers, and as we're talking teammates today, and sometimes we're amazed when those players will trade teams and become teammates with the former bitter enemy. But it's important to be a good teammate, you know, and we hit each over the head a little bit gently about football. But I think it might be my problem, Dave. You know, hockey at the end of the Stanley Cup, both teams will shake hands, you know, and I think that's good and virtuous and all of that. But, you know, when it comes to football and you see these guys have been battling, you know, all afternoon long, and then they might share the same agent. So they're slapping backs and having the great. It bothers me when the football players are friendly after the game, not the other sports. The other sports, I think that's fine and virtuous, but I don't know what that says about me. But
I can tell you exactly what it says, Glenn. It says that you're a Viking fan, and so you're always upset with the other team for winning. So that makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, that could well be. Boy, it's important to be a good teammate, not only on the field, but in all stages of life, and especially the workplace. And as we look at this list of what makes a good teammate or what doesn't, hopefully we recognize the good things in ourselves. But on the list, there's a few things that we might have seen in others that we've worked with. But, you know, to get us started, maybe, Dave, just a little chat about why it's important to be a good teammate, and even in this selfie age, to make it not all about us.
Yeah, it's difficult for people to not make it all about themselves. And, you know, you've heard me say this many times before. When you're in a society where people turn a camera toward themselves and take relentless pictures of themselves alone posing, and they'll take the same shot 30 times over until they're actually posed just right. And by the way, you see men and women doing this now. It is, I don't know, people don't really recognize how unhealthy that is. And that's just simply an example of how our society has become very distracted from a team-oriented attitude. Things are very, very much about themselves. The whole word selfie never existed. And if you were to watch a person, even in the year 2000, let alone 1980, turn a camera toward themselves and take relentless pictures, everybody seeing it would have thought that this was one of the highest examples of vanity that would be there. Now it's absolutely normal. It's considered abundantly normal, but I don't think that because it's behavior that's done by many, it's actually healthy anyway. Teams have to be able to turn the camera around and see others. They have to see the people that they're working with, and they have to see these people as important as they are. See, if we fail to recognize that the people on our team have the same hopes and dreams, or if they're not the same, they have hopes and they have dreams and they have aspirations. They want things in life that are important to them, and we can help them be a part of those things by having a collective victory. And so it's just really essential for us to not get too caught up in our own selves personally, but to see things from a team perspective.
Along with that, Dave, one of the things you point out is that so often we like to deflect blame even when something is our fault if we're not being a good teammate.
Yeah, so if you want to ask yourself these questions, if you can say yes to every one of these, then you probably are a good teammate. The first one is, do you avoid pointing the finger and passing blame? This is a huge thing. Now, it's interesting because I don't want to be romantic about the idea or naive about the idea. There are times where on a team, it is somebody else's fault. And if it were a contest of blame, they would be guilty of it. The problem is when we believe that the entire game is won or lost because of one thing like this. And I'm not just talking about sports. I'm talking about business. I'm talking about all sorts of things in life. So we have to consider the fact that we all have low times and high times when we're on a team. And we want our team members to pick us up and to encourage us when we make a mistake. And we want to be careful not to point the finger and blame others when they make mistakes. Now, there's two different types of mistakes. There's mistakes of not caring and total neglect. And then there are mistakes of talent and whatnot. We have to be particularly careful about the mistakes of talent. Like, I missed the pass, okay? Or I tried making a good decision using all the information I could, but I didn't quite get it right. As opposed to the ones where you do get a little more aggressive with people on your teams when they just didn't care or they acted with negligence. This is a time where a reprimand actually makes more sense.
Also in this environment, Dave, too, depending on what's going on, you know, we might even think in terms of a battle beyond the football field, but real battle or something with a real business deadline looming, in that, you know, you can sort out whose fault later, but you need to fix the problem, figure out the path to take, and that takes priority over bickering over whose fault it might be.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt about it. And this is difficult for some people because they get caught up in a tiny little war. And they believe somehow that this tiny little battle that they're facing is more important than the bigger picture, and it's not. It is there's a time to actually sort things out, and there's a time to actually work on what's relevant right there at that moment.
Looking at what it takes to be a good teammate at work and elsewhere with Dave Durand, our success coach, Dave, an author, speaker, executive coach, co-founder and executive chairman of Best Version Media, founder of Lighthouse Catholic Media, and a regular guest on Morning Air here as we look at what makes a good teammate. This is something we might have experienced in some of those group projects in high school. Do we carry our weight?
You know, it's interesting, too, when you talk to most people about the group project in high school, they're always the one who did all the work. Have you ever talked to the person who said, you know, I just sat around? Everyone that you talk to is the person that did all the work. By the way, I think that that's an important example, too, because we have a tendency to believe that we carry more weight than we probably actually do. And for us to be able to step back and have a very reasoned perspective, reasoned view, and how much work we're actually doing, and what is the perception of the people we're working with according to the work that we're doing? Is it a reasonable amount? Is it not? And we have to carry our own weight, and we have to look at it that way. You know, there's just no doubt about it, the classic saying that the chain is only as strong as its weakest link. It's a very real thing, and it's a very real thing when it comes to being on a team. So carry your weight.
Here's one that plays well into sports, I think. Hopefully, if you're, you know, you're blessed if you're in a job where you just love what you do, that you love the activities you do, you love the industry you're in. You hopefully are learning more about it, practicing your skills, reading up on the industry, or, you know, if you're a ball player, you know, taking some extra time in the batting cage and all of that. But you might be a good teammate if indeed you put in some practice time outside of what is formally required of you.
Yeah, this is a big deal. I mean, you know, there are very few things where a person becomes really the expert that they need to become when they're only practicing during the regular hours that are, you know, that are a part of the actual formal practice. But people get things done. You look at all of the examples, you know, in sports, and these people are working as hard as they possibly can off the court. And it's not just that. It's the physician that is taking time to learn things in trade magazines because there's only so many formal hours worth of continued education that you need as a physician. It's the pilot who's flying the airplane that is current, fine, nice, but are they more than just current? Are they staying up on everything they can to understand the latest things in aviation? It's the teacher who's, you know, not just going to go back for, you know, to keep up on continued education themselves, but they're going to say, hey, what can I do according to this particular student? They're going to talk to other teachers and professors, and they're going to say, hey, I'm dealing with this sort of thing in class. How do you reach this sort of person? As opposed to just kind of not caring. When we care, we have a desire to do more. It's again, it's like a family is a team in so many different ways. And it's the parent who says, there's nothing more important than raising these children or this child. So I'm not just going to go about this the way that I know, but I'm actually going to learn more about it. I'm going to go to parents who have done a tremendous job raising their kids. They've turned out the way I'd like my kids to turn out. I'm going to ask them, how did you do that? What did you do? And I'm going to get that encouragement. I'm not just going to say, hey, I'm parenting right now. That's all I need. No, I'm going to step outside of practice, and I'm going to learn to become an expert in what I'm doing.
Talking how to be a good teammate for all of us here. We're going to learn more with Dave Durand, especially a look right when we come back about how to offer some correction and the right and wrong ways to do that as Morning Air continues here on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app.
Working together, we can make a change. Working together, we can help better things.
Looking at life from a Catholic worldview, this is Morning Air.
Let's work together. Come on, come on, let's work together.
Learning how to better work together this morning here as we continue. Dave Durand, our success and leadership coach, on being a good teammate as Morning Air continues with Glenn and Sarah in for John today on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app. How do you correct a teammate? Now, that happens. It's not always our job to correct a peer. Sometimes it might be, but there is a right way and a wrong way to do that. The wrong way might be to criticize your teammate in the press. It might be to fight with your quarterback if you're not getting the ball enough as a receiver on the sideline. Those might not be the best ways to do that. Dave, what are the best ways to offer some correction?
You know, it's actually, it's interesting because it's the same for the teammate as it is for the leader. And there's a classic bit of advice that's so good. And that is to discipline in private and praise in public. This is a very, very important thing. And I'll tell you, one of the reasons for it in leadership or as a teammate is it makes you feel safe and secure. And by the way, this is, I'm not like this kind of like soft oriented, let's not have anybody have hurt feelings oriented teammate or leader, because that's literally impossible. I mean, really the only way to build a great team is to assemble people who can actually manage emotionally disappointing things, including criticism. So I think one of the key things is to not surround yourself with a bunch of people who are powder puffy and can't handle anything. But that being said, once you've done that, you don't want to abuse that virtue that they have or to weaken it. And so when you want people to perform at a high level, you need trust. Trust and security and safety are really paramount together. If you're walking on a creaky board and you are insecure about whether it's going to break or not, it's going to make you behave differently than if you're walking on a secure foundation. And it's the same thing in relationships too. So if a person says, listen, that person, Glenn, knew that I made this mistake, but they didn't publicly ridicule me amongst my peers as a leader or as a peer. They waited privately to speak to me. Not only am I more willing to hear the criticism, but I actually have a certain respect for you because I know you could have outed me, but you chose not to. And that's a powerful thing. If you actually combine that with the idea that in the midst of the criticism, you might take an opportunity to publicly praise a good portion of what that person did. Now they feel really good about what's happening. And I know a lot of people are like, you know what? I can take criticism. They should be able to take it. I'm just going to deliver it because that's what I do. That's the most naive thing. Sure, fine. Maybe you are like that. And by the way, I'd also say this. You might be like that, but you probably aren't quite as like that as you think. Usually people like that are a little bit more sensitive to criticism than they think, but they just like to dole out and they use it as an excuse. So it is important to really be kind about this sort of thing.
Dave, one of the things we talk about here with success in leadership is being a leader, even if it's not technically our title. Next on the list, being able to encourage others, even if you don't feel encouraged.
Oh, yes. So one of the things that happens quite often in leadership and even in parenting is people will look back on their own talent, their own mistakes, their own, even will. And they will believe that they can't lead outside of their own actual spectrum. Meaning, for example, they say, well, you know what? I might have taken drugs or been promiscuous as a youth. So who am I to tell my kids not to? Well, you're their parent. Are you kidding me? Your mistakes do not dictate the mistakes of your children. If that were the case, every generation would be worse than the previous. So the idea is to learn from the mistakes and then to shape people. If you're in sales and you only sold X amount in a year, let's call it a million, and so you're looking at your team and you can't ask them to sell more than a million because that's all you sold, you're depriving the people who could have absolutely ran, laps around you and sold 3 million. So you want to encourage people to go to their highest level. And if you're not motivated that day to do your job, you still have an obligation to motivate others. Listen, if you're a cardiologist and you're a chain smoker, and so you think you don't have the right to tell your patients not to smoke, you're wrong about that. Even if you're lighting one up yourself, you still need that day while you can't quit smoking to tell or encourage your patients to do that. So these are very, very important things, but we have a tendency to forget that there's a difference between a hypocrite and a weak person. A hypocrite is a person who says quit smoking and they don't even believe that quitting smoking is a good thing to do. A weak person is say quit smoking because it's a good thing to do and it's smart and I believe in that, but I'm still personally too weak to do it. So let's remember, hey, in your weakness, you still need to promote good behavior. It doesn't make you a hypocrite. A hypocrite is a person who purports things they don't actually even believe. So this gets in the way, and it gets in the way of encouragement too.
I have seen this in my days on the court playing ball, as well as in professional settings too. You get a star on the team and they can raise the standards. You can do that for yourself as well as others by performing at a high level.
yes, you know what? There is something very real about athletic performance, about business performance, about families, about any organization. And that is that they need to become better and better and better. I mean, when we look at technology and advancements, or even the ability to become missionaries or evangelists, we should be way better at than we used to. Why? We have more information, we have more experience, we have more examples, we have more saints, we have more technology to use in order to do good. There's so many different things that we have. We have more scientific, or we have more medical advancements. These things just even keep people healthier while they're, you know, advocating the things that they need to advance. So the problem is that we have a tendency to use advancements, particularly in technology, and to assume that because we were born into a certain area of technological advancements, that it means that we are smarter than previous generations. We are not. And unless you were the person who actually invented all of these things, and you made all of the discoveries which led up to the invention of those things which you invented, you can't actually take that sort of credit. We're building on other people and their wisdom. So if we have basically technology supplant or retard our actual virtues and personal intellect or ability to ration and reason, then we're going to have a problem. And so we need to raise our standards. And we need to say, listen, no matter what it is that we're doing, we have to become better at it. And I need personally become better at it. Not in a scrupulous way, not in a perfectionist way. There's a difference between a person seeking perfection and a perfectionist. But we do have to have that high standard.
And finally, Dave, one of the things about being a good teammate here, and this is something I think maybe we don't talk enough about, especially to our young people, and that's the ability, as we're focusing on victory and trying to do everything right to the best of our ability and continue to get better, but bouncing back with resilience in defeat. There'll be many times in life when there'll be something that happens to us to knock us down, or more often something we did to ourselves that trips us up, and we need to get back up again.
Yeah, and I see a strange thing happening here. I see some people saying, winning is the only thing. You know, it's that classic Lombardi thing, which I don't think he ever actually said, by the way. Winning isn't everything, it's the only thing, or whatever. But, so you see some people super focused on this, and you have some people trying to battle against that mentality and saying that really it doesn't matter if you win or lose, it's how you play the game. Well, yes-ish, but here's the thing about it. If you're going to be on a team, if you're going to assemble, win. Like, literally think, I'm going to win. Because that is a metaphor for every other victory. If you want to fly a plane from LA to New York, your victory is landing in New York. You want to win that. You don't want to lose that challenge. But at the same time, when we are on a regular team or we're in business, if we don't have the victory we want, we have to be resilient and then go after it again and have a good attitude about it. But yes, let's focus on victory and be resilient when we lose.
Absolutely. And may the best team win, except in the NFC North.
Oh, that's right. So you're hoping for the not-so-best team to win. I get it.
Yeah, we need to get there one way or the other. Thank you so much, Dave Durand, our success and leadership coach. Always a joy. We continue now with Morning Air. Time for a listen to today's Story Corner. Our story today called From Behind Bars to Shooting for the Stars from Sunny Skies. A young Texas woman whose life began behind bars has been accepted into Harvard University after graduating third in her class. 18-year-old Aurora Skye Kastner was born in the Galveston County Jail. Her father picked her up from jail and raised her as a single dad. Her mom was incarcerated at the time and has never been a part of her life. I was born in prison, reads the first line of her Harvard application letter. Kastner credits her mentor, Mona Hamby, for her success. Kastner and Hamby met when the young Kastner was just in elementary school. The school staff introduced her to a community mentorship program where adult volunteers grab lunch with young students at least once a week. I was given a paper about her. Her hero was Rosa Parks. Her favorite food, tacos from Dairy Queen, and she loved to read. I thought, this sounds like a bright little girl. As Hamby spoke to the Houston Chronicle, going on to say, I still have that paper today. She told me, I've been to jail. I said, no, that can't be right. And I knew that I can't just go to eat lunch with this kid once a week. She needed more. Hamby became a major part of Kastner's life since that day, taking her to get her first haircut at a salon, helping her to get glasses, and she was also there when she toured at Harvard. Kastner not only succeeded in getting accepted into Harvard, she'll also be attending the Ivy League school on a full scholarship. Girl set a goal to go to Harvard in elementary school despite being born in poverty. Received a full scholarship to attend Harvard in 2023. That from Hamby in a recent Facebook post. Others in the community stepped up and looked out for the teen as well, from helping her get dental care to gifting her the experience of summer camp. Kastner has said that she's beyond excited to be attending Harvard in the fall with sights set on a future law degree. Jeremiah 29:11 says, "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future." That's our story for today. If you'd like to hear it again, you can access that in podcast form on the Relevant Radio app or at relevantradio.com. And you're always welcome to send your Story Corner suggestions to us. Something you ran across, you think that everybody would enjoy, or if something you've written yourself, just email that to morningair@relevantradio.com, morningair@relevantradio.com. Thanks to Sarah for rocking out with us this morning on the board, playing and pushing the buttons, and also our producer, Gabby. John, presumably back tomorrow, and thank you for joining us. Stick around, though. Patrick Madrid is coming up next, along with Cyrus. And I think since it's a short week, this is a Wednesday, it feels like Tuesday. Maybe it could be Taco Wednesday, too. Oh, we'll see what the boys think. That's all coming up next. Stick around for more here on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app.